In this episode of What the Prophets Say, join me, Emma Stark, and my husband, David Stark, with Nigel and Louise Reed here in Glasgow in Scotland, the headquarters of our ministry, the Global Prophetic Alliance, as we do a really significantly important deep dive into what leaders need to know to lead in crisis. Join us for this episode of What the Prophets Say. Hello, loyal listeners, and welcome to another action-packed, informative, and stretching podcast of What the Prophets Say. And I'm joined again in this mini-series by the significant intelligence, they're laughing again, that is my husband, David Stark, and of course, the joy and the gift to us all that are Nigel and Louise Reed. How are you three?
We're all good. I think.
Very good.
Yes.
Looking forward to this conversation, Emma.
Yes. Yeah, I think so, because we've promised that we talk about leadership. We've had 2 hours of 2 broadcasts before talking about other things. And we went as the Spirit led.
Just building the momentum.
We are building the momentum. Yeah.
Anticipation.
Yes, exactly. So we actually are filming these and recording these all on the same day so that we remember where we are, guys. We've had our lunch. Mm-hmm. Which we discovered you love, one of your favorite meals ever, is Chinese
so good.
Food.
Chinese food, love it. It's top of the pile as far as I'm concerned.
But Louise Reed, not so much.
Oh, I love Chinese food. I just don't always love what it does to me.
Right. That was not what I was expecting you to
no,
say.
No, it's just in the British Isles, it's full of MSG.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I always wake up the following day going, I shouldn't have it, but Chinese right. last night. But I do love it on the way in.
Don't even go there.
I love Chinese. Chinese is fantastic.
You can't say that we're not an honest set of podcasters, yeah.
Well,
can you?
Know.
Look, you all know what I'm talking about, guys.
Suffering, encounter, and confession of sin. I think that was what we discussed in our last episode.
Well,
you've got it all there.
Now I've encountered our truth. We've confessed our sin. Yes, but only you will suffer. Anyway, so we bless you into healing, Louise Reed. Nigel might suffer a bit on the side. But
no, it's just I swell up. That's what happens.
That
with MSG?
Happen
yeah, no, it doesn't happen to him at all. No, my
headaches,
fingers swell up.
With MSG? Yeah,
I don't get headaches. But I do feel a bit toxic the following day.
I just feel thirsty.
Yeah, well, thirsty.
Right. Okay.
But I'll tell you, but great Chinese food. And that was superb Chinese food that we just had. Very, very nice.
There is 3 doors down, but they're shut at the moment. The best pakora rice, Indian pakora.
Sorry, listeners, if you're
hungry.
Hungry or
if you're fasting. This is not the podcast
or you're listening
for you.
To us in the middle of the night and now you have to go up and rustle yourself.
Got the munchies.
Up some noodles, yeah?
I find that when I watch MasterChef, I'm like, I have to have, even if I've eaten, it does, it gets the salivary glands.
Juices start to flow.
They do.
Sure.
But Louise, you had a confession that, this is true, prophet, that when you watch the cooking program, you fast forward the middle of it when they're actually doing the process.
The process is so boring. It really is. It's like, I want it at inception. I want the concept. I want the dream. I want the vision. And I want the drive. And then fast forward through to, and here we are.
Right.
I love that.
Is this a sign of where is the process, Louise Reed?
Was absent there. I'm okay on some other processes.
It's so like working at GPA for the decades.
Oh,
that
so
been done this.
It's like I'm not really great on operations.
Right, we've got a new idea. Right, when's
Make
it happening?
Happen.
When's it happening? When's it happening? Yeah, why is it not out yet? Well,
prophets do like to, move at pace. So do apostles, actually. Mm-hmm. After asking you at the beginning of the last episode your favorite music, and we went into very odd places, I'm nervous to say, what's your favorite TV program? Now that Louise has admitted to fast forwarding her cookery programs,
what's your favorite?
Well, for
Nigel?
Me, anything crime and drama. So whether it's Midsommar Murder, Poirot,
or the
other side, NCIS, or any of those, love all of that sort of thing.
Hercule Poirot.
And in the midst of it all, I confess. So we're back to confession again, but there we are.
Please don't be dodgy, Nigel.
It's really not, but we do enjoy the laugh of a Big Bang Theory.
I've never watched it.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
It's clever.
It's very clever, very bright.
It's surely for a Northern Irish girl, it has to be Derry Girls.
Oh, well, Derry Girls is fantastic, but it is a bit rough around the edges now, Emma. You'd
it's
have to
like,
say.
But can I say, it is exactly like
this
my childhood.
It is so true to life.
It is like going back, and there's girls in that I'm like, I grew up with you.
Yes. Yeah. It's scarily true.
It's very clever.
This is growing up in the Troubles of Northern Ireland. Yeah. It's a sitcom.
The black humour.
The black humour of
people
where you
going
go
about their everyday life, but in
when
a
there's bombs
civil war
going
zone,
off,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. What about yeah?
Some fabulous characters.
There are, yeah. Uh-huh.
Are you going to confess, Louise, the things you watch?
No, I'm not going to confess anything because I don't feel secure.
Dr. Pimple Popper.
Well, apparently you
love Pimple Popper.
Can we just say, I like anything.
I believe it.
I'm not into his slow dramas. Mm-hmm. I like to be the drama, not have to watch the drama.
Don't want to process. Just tell us who murdered it.
Who murdered it?
Exactly.
Okay,
usually,
thank you.
Usually I've worked it out at the beginning anyway.
Because you're a prophet.
Well, you know, for whatever reason. They're all the same at the end of the day. But I do love a good lancing of an abscess.
Oh my goodness.
Or something like that.
Already.
And he just finds that really, really vulgar. I find it redemptive. I find it releasing. I feel like it's another level of deliverance.
Yes, it's getting
incredibly satisfying.
It's bringing holiness, isn't it? It's getting rid of the past. I watch it in YouTube, the pimple popping, and David gets so irritated.
Yes, horrific.
Do you as well?
Oh, I get infuriated with it.
Yeah, he gets quite cross with me and begins to demean me in a way, like as if I am one with the abscess.
And the other
really
thing she watches
like
is that program where the woman is a nanny and she goes into people's houses and tells them
how.
I can't stand that.
It's when I feel like I need a bit of discipline. I'll stick that on.
Go on the naughty step.
But
put yourself in the naughty step then afterwards.
Just does something. Also makes me feel like a better mother because you see some terrible things.
I kind of like watching a naughty child in church or a naughty child in the supermarket because I think, well, mine were never quite that bad.
Yeah,
yes, that is true, actually. I'm with you on that.
Naughty children
but,
in
you know,
church.
We actually don't really watch TV, do we really?
After listing all of the things you like to
well,
watch.
That's about in the last decade, to be fair.
Here's another confession. I have a man cave with a 65-inch television in it.
And
Louise is banned from it. And I watch a lot of rugby on it.
Sport. I know. Well,
and we're right in the middle of Six Nations.
We are right in the middle of rugby season. Yeah. And so this weekend, we're watching Scotland play in France, and you're watching
Ireland against Italy. But last weekend was glorious with Ireland against France.
Yeah, yeah.
In the south of France.
Surely Ireland. Surely Ireland are going to win.
Who knows? Look, it's every match on its own merits.
Please,
but it was
Jesus.
Fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I know. We have fights in our house, whether it be Scotland or whether it be Ireland. Of course, it'll be Ireland. David, your favourite TV programme?
I don't know.
Mastermind
don't
or something.
He does like intelligent quiz programs.
Haven't watched TV in a long time. I think in the last few years, I loved Chernobyl, the miniseries on Chernobyl. It was amazing. Great drama. So well done. And
do you know what we do watch together
Money
as a
Heist,
family?
Which was a bit
Sky Portrait Artist of the Year.
Oh
yes.
I think I'm
but you'll not like that again, Louise, because there's process. It's just show us the painting.
I can have a sleep.
Who are you going to draw? Okay, is that the photo, Grant?
I could
done.
Sleep in the middle, couldn't I?
Emma, it reminds me of one of our friends who has a spectacular word of knowledge gift, and they were at a church in America that do a Halloween treasure hunt.
Can we just say for the tape?
That's a Derry Girls reference.
That is a Derry Girls reference. We do not like Halloween in any form. Yes,
no, and exactly. neither did our friend. And they were so annoyed that a church was doing a Halloween treasure hunt that they used their word of knowledge gift to identify. It was supposed to take the youth all night. They would do it all night, all around the entire city.
It was like the main event of
everyone
the church
got into cars and they drove around the city and followed clues. But these guys got the word of knowledge to the exact field, the exact location in the field, dug the thing up. They got into so much trouble.
Yeah, they ruined the church's Halloween via word of knowledge.
Prophets can't be doing with the process. There you
absolutely.
Are.
Get holy now,
exactly.
He says
everything's
the Lord.
Urgent.
Everything is urgent.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what's your favourite programme then?
No, I like Derry Girls. No, I do like, no, I think because we live such busy lives, I do not want anything that requires a lot of brain power.
Yeah, I see that.
So I'm, you know, I like a home building program. I like a cookery program. It's like something actually quite banal.
Yeah.
And because I'm seer prophet, I cannot take any images that are too strong. And how old would arachnophobia be?
Oh, ancient.
Or like it's decades and decades.
I was still at school.
No, I was still at school, and I'm nearly 50.
Early 90s.
Yeah, I still have images of the spiders that I find, because I'm so image impressionable that I just can't watch stuff.
I actually have to be very careful. There's things Nadja can watch that I can't watch. Simply
Master Chef.
I can watch a good abscess blowing up, but I can't watch violence.
No, I can't.
I can't watch anything with imagery that is too powerful.
No. No, and I think it's a little bit. Now you see, now we're going to go somewhere very controversial. I don't know what these programs. Mm-hmm. Dave is going. Oh, I can see the face. Mm-hmm. I actually won't read the kind of extra canonical books. I will only read scripture, or you know, Christian books that are written. But I won't read the Book of Enoch. I won't read, and I know that they can be useful. I just don't want any images in my head that are outside of the canon of scripture that describe what heaven might be like or what angels might look like, or because I want that. And it's a very personal thing to me, and I know other people love it, but I just can't go there. I have to hold myself to a standard where I don't let what happens in my... in my encounter vision realm be at all interfered with.
Mm-hmm. I get that.
Yeah.
Very purist. But it's very important because you can't allow yourself be influenced.
I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get
that. It's not for everybody, but I'm quite strict with that. Yes. Any thoughts? I'm watching the men's.
I'm not getting dragged into
just
that.
Bring on the rugby.
We're not going down that rabbit hole.
It'd be interesting though, wouldn't it, Nigel?
Yeah, that was a separate mini series in its own right.
That is a mini series. How did the canon of scripture get to be the canon of scripture? Anyway, shall we move on?
Leadership.
Leadership. So here we are. Let me try to repaint the scene of the last two episodes, really rich in our podcast trilogy with the four of us. And we were looking at the epoch of crisis, the era of weak leaders. We were reflecting on what the church then needed to become, or where it needed to review its priorities for how it met and how it was with each other, how we are with each other, looking at the need to share suffering, share encounters, share confession of sin, and the sense of really the Lord driving us into greater depth of relationship and belonging that hold us and will hold us through the crisis, and actually will be a more compelling witness than some of the constructs that we have today. So we're in that kind of water. And so the question that we're asking today is this afternoon for us in Glasgow. Good morning if it's your morning, and good evening if it's your evening. But we're in the afternoon, and we have posed the concept that we have leaders that are not, or are going to find that they're not fit for the purpose, they're not fit for the job. But that does not mean that we undermine them, that they probably were highly skilled in another era. They brought to the table what they needed to bring. But now we are in the direction of needing leaders who know how to navigate crisis. And what is God saying about that? What are the skills they need to have? What does a leader who's leading in a crisis era need to think, need to read, how do they need to be communicating? And what is God saying into that? Because there will always be the need for leadership, because we're not going to go back to this sense of I was going to say socialism, but any form of, you know, this kind of Baptist form of government. I grew up Baptist, so I can say this. One member, one vote. We all have, you know, equal opinion. And social media says, oh, you know, we're all the same. We can all come. No, no, no. God blesses leaders and he sets leadership structures in place. He is our leader, our chief cornerstone. He is the God of all gods and he does have a hierarchy. His hierarchy happens to be family, so it works along a slightly different vibe. But here we are. What is God saying to leaders, the Churchill leaders who will need to arise in wartime and need to arise in crisis? So that is the framework of the next 45 minutes, my lovely friends. Who would like to pick that up?
David would.
Oh, thank you, Louise. I think... when you talk about times of crisis, I think what many of us feel looking back at 2020 is that we had our trial run. Now, apologies for that sounds very crass to describe 2020 as a trial run because I know it was a very painful time for many millions
of
people.
It was a dress rehearsal to what's coming, and I yet, think we would say.
Yes, and yet, despite all that it was, it was just the beginning. And I think in it, the church fell short. We fell short. Many of us did some new things and adapted. But were we truly what the church in the centuries preceding and over the last two millennia have been in crisis? I think crisis has made the church. If you go right back to AD 70, the crisis of the siege of Jerusalem and Jesus' instructions to the Christians to run for the hills basically started an explosion of Christians out of Jerusalem and into the parts of the world. The persecution in the decades before that. Then the plague in the Roman Empire, and the church were the ones in the middle of the plague who went out and started to minister because they weren't afraid of death. So they ministered to people in that. So and so that was the first hospitals. Before that, we didn't have hospitals. You didn't have nurses. You had the Christians going out amongst the plague. And so these stories have always inspired me that in times of crisis, the church should lead. And yet in 2020, our government decided that church was not an essential service. It was not needed. There were other essential services who were allowed to operate in the middle of lockdown. Church was not one of them. Why? Was that because of the government? Perhaps you could make an argument that the governments were anti-church and anti-Christian. But I think the main thing was we had failed in our leadership in society and culture to remain relevant and necessary and essential service to our communities and cultures.
And can I push, and I'm going to come straight to Nigel with this, in terms of the irrelevance of or the church who became irrelevant, if we said the church where the wheels fell off, if we put it like that, the church became irrelevant by trying to be relevant in the
exactly.
wrong ways.
Yes, relevant.
It was not
yes.
counterculture enough.
Yeah.
So our attempt to become relevant and contemporary actually was our ultimate
downfall
and our ultimate irrelevance. Mm. So I think it's worth sitting in that for a few minutes together. So in that diagnostic way of what happened to leadership in that epoch, and I'm going to, you were leading in that epoch, Nigel.
I was leading
you
in
were
that
leading
epoch.
In that epoch
yeah.
when the wheels came off. And it's not all your fault.
That's a relief.
It's all right. It's all right. But the sense of let's go diagnostic before we go prophetic and calling the future forth in leaders. We need to understand where we lost the plot.
Yeah, and it's very challenging in it all, really. And as you said, we were leading a church in the context of lockdown, like so many people were.
Yeah, yeah.
And for us, it came very rapidly. I mean, Louise was actually in Glasgow the week of lockdown, and she flew home on Thursday night and they locked Ireland down on the Friday morning. Mm-hmm. Totally. Mm-hmm. And we had to revert to this thing called Zoom. Do you remember when you didn't know what Zoom was, or it was something on a camera lens, you know? And now it's part of our lives in every way. And I remember Louise saying to me, we have to go on Zoom. And I'm going, you must be joking. Our church is old. They won't. And of course, they were all grandparents. They've been Zooming around the world to their grandchildren. So, you know, you were always in this tussle of, do you fight the system? Mm-hmm. Or do you mold around and see what God was saying? And I think it's hard to be definitive of that. I had friends in Dublin, and Ireland was particularly badly and strongly locked down. Mm-hmm. And there was a sense, this may be controversial, but there was a sense in Ireland as if the governing authorities were having a whip back at all that had happened over the years with the abuse scandals and everything. So they cut everything down. I mean, you cannot believe that mm-hmm. in Ireland, from the 12th of March, the pubs were closed and the Catholic Church was closed. I mean, that is remarkable mm-hmm. in Irish terms. And you've got to handle and work through that thing. Some of my friends fought against it and weren't successful. Mm-hmm. I can't sit here and say I know any church leader who fought against it and came out on top. They didn't. But I knew many who worked around it and molded it and challenged it in different ways. And they were successful. And they navigated. I mean, even we navigated the lockdowns very well, and our people very well got to actually teach on things that they mightn't have come out in an evening for, but they actually wanted to sit online and listen to. So we dealt with all sorts of big mm-hmm. subjects. But at the end of the day, you've got to make that choice. What am I going to fight against? What's the battle worth fighting on the hill for?
Yeah,
and
what's
what
the hill worth dying on?
Exactly.
I think a lot of us, and we watched a lot of choosing the wrong hill to die on, the wrong fight, rather than saying, actually, how can I bring the kingdom of God in the best way, rather than just exert energy against the state. I think there was, the issue was, I'm trying to fight to make an irrelevant church relevant in the wrong way. I think the better question, and the question I would want us to sit in, is how would we have come to that but pre-pandemic with the church being considered vital? Because when your church is not vital in 2020, you cannot argue with the state that you're vital. Oh, it's a right. You're not worth listening to. You've not done anything that we perceive to be vitally important for society mm-hmm. or community. So why fight when you're only ever seen as redundant? Why not spend all your energy going to say, God, how do we go back to being a readied bride, something vital, something that holds a place, and an understanding of this is needed.
We were reactionary and had been, the rot set in long before 2020.
Yes.
And I suppose the church in the 80s and 90s was in such a program of much needed modernization to actually catch up with contemporary society. But that fight to be relevant, we lost our revolutionary and countercultural edge, which we then should have moved into. Yes, by all means, let's modernize, because we had got stuck somewhere centuries ago. Mm. But actually, we didn't keep going forwards into that radical thing. And instead, we became reactionary, so that now, where we are in 2024, people know us for some of the things that we react against badly. But they don't know the things that we are absolutely pro.
They don't know us for miracles, signs and wonders. They don't know us by our love. They don't know us by our generosity. They don't know us by any positive measure.
Our gentleness, kindness, our self-control, our, all the, you know, the fruit of the Spirit that we're supposed to be known by.
Yes.
They don't know. And the church should be ringing that out, shining that out to society. Instead, they know us for all the wrong reasons.
We're only known as we're shutting down because we're negative. Mm-hmm. Or power hungry.
Or hate filled.
Yes.
And it was interesting that we, in general, the church was fighting to be back open. And that was the fight. When it really felt to me like the Lord was putting up a mirror and showing us the measure of who we really were, which we didn't come off particularly well mm-hmm. in that. Because post-lockdown, one of the big difficulties was that people didn't want to return to what was there before, which was extremely telling. So even for the people of God, the gathered meetings were still irrelevant, or at least not relevant enough for them to return to. And really, we lost our voice. It showed that we didn't particularly have a voice in society because government was not coming to the church to say what's happening. What do you hear God saying? There was no interest. The church became so subject to the government rather than or the rulership, because obviously true government is what the church has. But no elected politicians, as far as I know, were coming to the church to say, can you give us a context for this within the mind and the will of God? Mm-hmm. That was not happening.
So is that a failure of leadership, in that we not only were not leading in society, but also we weren't leading our people back after lockdown?
I think leaders were fighting for the wrong thing, because instead of fighting for the kingdom, and I mean, there was a million ways in COVID and in lockdown that as the church, we could have been in much more. And some were, can I just say, well done to those who were, but we could have been very effective in how we rang up. I mean, there was no problem with making a phone call to anybody, phoning your neighbours, encouraging, prophesying, putting stuff out online, etc., etc. But we were so not ready. So it happened and it was like, oh my goodness, when we don't have our construct, we don't know how to function. And I think that was a real mirror for us to see what we were really like. And in days of crisis now, my hope is that leaders will be much more readied to be a lot more flexible to and be able to adapt so that the message of Jesus Christ, the gospel, the kingdom, the gospel of the kingdom can go out on the airwaves, neighbor to neighbor, etc., etc., rather than just the construct of the church in the way that we see it and gathered church.
I think one of my major concerns about the church over the last 50 years, which, because you never get to 2020 without a very long story, almost a multi-generational story of leadership batons handed on and a trajectory of long-standing travel that takes you to what we got in 2020. So the rage against the machine, so to speak, in 2020, you know, was shallow and ill-advised, because we should have seen the trajectory we were on over many multiple decades before. And the trajectory for me was this. It was absolute spiritual sterility. And so the church did not have the power of God. Now, let me define what I mean by that, because I don't mean a domination power, as you will well know if you listen to us at all. How do I measure the kingdom? How does the Bible measure the kingdom? How do I know when the kingdom has come? How do I work with the outworkings of the kingdom day to day? Well, for me, it's actually not complicated. I don't know why we make the kingdom of God so gloriously complex. And there are things that we want to know more about. I do understand that. But here we go. You cast out demons. You raise the dead. You heal the lepers. The blind see. The lame walk, you know. And the sense of you come to the people of God and the kingdom invades your life and you're whole and you're well and you're different and you're transformed. And it's measurably explosive in its transformative power in you, whether that's emotional, whether that's physical, whether that's spiritual, where the demons go. And so suddenly you come into this community that is so alive by virtue of the power of its leader, who is Jesus Christ. And so when we spent years in spiritual sterility, well, let's just sing a nice song, as much as we really love high, intense worship, but we weren't doing high, intense, you know, I'm singing in this wild, abandoned, you are worthy, I pour myself out way. So we were singing in a more tepid way than most concerts were singing. There was no measurable sense of the worthiness of the king, even in the sung plays. There was no sense of his power in my pain. There was no sense of his transformation in my sickness. There was no sense of my mind being renewed. There was nothing of the power of God that we had measurable, because we had taken the power and the spirit out, apart from anything of domination. So you get the rise of the seeker friendly. You get the rise of, you know, conferences that are coaching more than transformational. You get the rise of, I mean, I'm on a bit of a rant here, but most of contemporary church over years only got built and was only ever remotely seen as acceptable because we had taken the power of God and the Spirit out. And then we have this crazy nonsense. Oh no, I'm too opinionated. We had this crazy nonsense we called missional communities and missional church, which was a shallow step to try to go back to reach people. I'm slapping my pen on the table again with no dynamism of the power of God. And so we realized something was wrong and went for the wrong solution again.
Yeah.
So by 2020, what the heck else did you expect?
Yes.
But let me ask you this, David and Emma, because as an outsider at the time for me,
yes.
I mean, the success story, one of the success stories in the church of the lockdown 2020 to 2022
yes.
was actually GPA.
Yes.
And BICOP at some level.
The British
for many, many people, you guys kept spiritual bread and butter on the table during a time when there wasn't any.
Yes.
I mean, for me, was that just a God incident, or was that just a coincidence, or did you have great prophetic insight that this was all coming down the line and you would do this?
Yeah, I'd love to say yes, we were so steeped in revelation. No, that's a lie. There was one thing that gripped me, and I had a suddenly, aha, I'd never broadcast really. I'd done bits and pieces. I'd studied Shakespeare. I'd done theatre and musical theatre, and I knew how to navigate a platform. I knew how to perform. I knew how to kind of speak, but I didn't know how to broadcast. And I felt this sense of underpinning it all. The word of the Lord to me was at that point, there needs to be consistent, repetitious, authentic availability. That was kind of all I had. I didn't know the framework of it. And the sense of, and I would say this about church culture, we're down to the sense of, oh, let's do these things once a month, or let's do this thing because of our busy lives. The level of authentic relational connection has got to be rigorously repetitive. And so the Lord had said to me, you've got to be authentic and you've got to be frequent, for it was all about frequency and authenticity. So I said to David, I mean, I've never set up a Zoom call in my life. I don't know how to do one. It's pathetic, isn't it? He does it all. So, and I just said to David, we've got to do this every day. I didn't know what the content was going to be. And because of my silly Northern Irish accent that can't pronounce the W in the word par, it just seemed funny to me, you know, par, ar, you know, that name was as kind of like as fluffy and light as that. But the underpinning thought was frequent authenticity. And all I had was the notes on prophecy. And healing and deliverance, that's all I knew.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. So we were, and people said to us, you know, the teaching was great. They loved the seeing in the spirit, but they loved the nonsense of, I hate a hot tub.
Yeah.
And
do you?
I hate a hot tub.
Yes, there was nearly a whole episode on it, or a
and Crocs,
theme.
You know, or the ridiculous, you know, decorations in our room. And I kind of feel like, what does it gain if I am not real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have got to be able to rip my life open and say, this is how we live and this is who we are. And, you know, I get into a host of bother over, you know, how many lipsticks I own or the height of the heels or the and honestly, I get to the point where I think, what do you want? Sanitized?
Well, that's what the church has had. And I think, I mean, Emma, you're saying about the, you know, the prolific way you guys broadcast, particularly with Power Hour in COVID.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just that it was repetitive and you were there every day, although that was very important.
Yes.
It was the fact that you were functioning in a spirit realm
yes.
that people were hungry for. And part of that is the transparency, the authenticity. But it was also we're a big shift from, I mean, Najah and I have this conversation often because it used to literally drive me berserk in years gone by, that we are so overtaught. And we are loaded with so much information in the church. But the level of revelation we had on the information and the level of application we had on the revelation was really problematic.
Yeah.
So I think in your leadership and in what is, I think, required going forward, is that level of we can trust because there's the perpetuality of it and it's strong and it's immovable and all of that and you can rely on it. But it's the spirit element and strong in the word. And it's not just about dishing out more information so that you can go and live a better life. It's kingdom and it's gutsy. And it's a little out there and it'll push you into application and revelation where you go away with having feeling like your life has been transformed because you partook in those decrees and you partook in those encounters.
And
so you go away very changed. And that's what leadership going forward is going to have to deal with.
I think it is. It's the authenticity of your own life exposed, but the authenticity of your journey with God that you're expressing to each other. I want to be really your friend, and I really want to be a friend of God, and I want that completely open so that it's not sanitized in any way. And frequency matters.
It does.
So can I tell you, we have taken, I've taken a world of criticism for it, you know, where people have said to me, don't you bring your Irishness, because they think it's Irish. I think it's just relational. Don't you bring your Irishness to my nation? Don't you? Oh, you. And I kind of feel like my life is long ago not my own. It's long ago not my own. Do I have secrets? Well, I can't even remember any of them if I ever had them. But it's so open booked and it's... To me, we're living a sign of what we need to become.
Well, that, I mean, that in a sense is almost where I wanted to look at, because as you know, on behalf of GPA, I'm talking to people literally around the world at the moment in Zooms, and mainly leaders, and many of them will say, this Power Hour, Power Church, it's a lifeline for me. And that's the word that's used to me on a frequent basis.
Yes.
It's a lifeline for me. And I suppose I'm thinking you came into COVID and did this remarkable job. But as we project forward in this time of crisis, what do you see coming down the road in this realm of broadcasting and media? Is there anything you can tell us?
Yes. No, absolutely. Because God's been speaking to me very clearly on that, and we've talked about it behind the scenes, so you sort of probably know where I'm going to go with the
kind
answer.
Kind of, but I'd like to hear
the answer from the horse's mouth. Anyway, I do think that, and I'm sitting on a set of broadcasts in my spirit and in dialogue with you guys and how we do it, because what it's going to require is frequency again. And that becomes... it's a burden that you bear, frequency of communication. Leaders, hear me well. Frequent, consistent, reliable, authentic communication is a burden you bear. Mm. And there is this thing that you want to go and hide on occasions, or you're processing something and you just, you know, the times you must have done it too, where you stand at the front of the church and say, oh my goodness, it's Sunday again, I've got a microphone in my hand. Oh no, I didn't process that thing from the week that I should have processed. Is it going to leak out in the microphone? I've done that more times than I can tell you, you know. But the so I'm sitting reluctantly on a new level of broadcasting, because I know it's going to demand frequency.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah.
And that's why I'm sitting on it. And for all of us, whatever you do, that where the people are at and the level of crisis, they will take your nonsense, my wildness, my hair, the silly conversation. They will take the silliness because they know we are reliably, consistently there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
In a world that shifts.
In a world that shifts.
Secular
and the big story to leadership is you must be repetitively present, whether you like it or whether you feel like it or not, which is why I think you're going to have to find a team ministry dynamic, number one.
Mm. Team ministry, yeah.
Because it has got to be consistent.
Yeah, you're not saying that means they can't never take a day off. That's not what you're. Mm-mm. That's not what you're saying. Mm-mm. It's not that. And technology allows us to have ways of doing that. But you must have some sort of avenue that people can be connecting with.
Now that means they're going to see you in all sorts of personality moments. Mm-hmm. It means they're going to see you in all sorts of outfit clothing moments.
But that's okay, because the pulpit is dead. The days of putting on your robes and standing in a pulpit, standing aloof from the people, that's gone.
Yes, gone.
Yes, yes, yes.
We see cameras into each other's rooms, some broadcast from their bedrooms, you know.
There were some dodgy moments.
And yes, you say team. I think that's another distinctive of what we've always tried to do with the ministry, is it's not just one voice. It's teams always bringing on new people to, because everyone has got something to say. Everyone's got something to minister.
But I would want to apply this to our previous conversations. The frequency of communion, worship, confessing of sins, sharing our suffering. It's this lifestyle of we do this together. I don't get to drive into a big megachurch car park whenever it jolly well takes my fancy, because most people are attending church, the stats say, once a month. How on earth are we going to survive without, and I'm not being an advocate for our own church attendance, I'm being an advocate for our consistency in our relationships, or our consistency in our broadcasting, our consistent presence with one another according to the call of God in our lives with our specialist skills, because if I can't do that, I will not be a port in a storm for anybody, no matter what level you're at, whenever crisis comes.
And that lifestyle thing is huge. I mean, we're talking about leadership.
Yeah.
Isn't something critical for the current world that we're living in as leaders, that our whole rhythms of life are vitally important? Because I used to have a friend who'd say, you know, I'm very spontaneous as long as I have 20 minutes notice. You know, and there's something about that with leadership that just doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And we were talking on one of the other podcasts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that verse where Jesus encounters, is it the deaf and dumb spirit, and the disciples have tried to get rid of it, and he turns around and he says, he delivers it straight away, and then he says, that only comes out by prayer and fasting. Well, when did he fast? It wasn't certainly when he saw the deaf and dumb spirit.
Yes.
You know, he had a lifestyle.
Yes.
And I think that part of the whole leadership preparation is we got to have consistency, not only in all the broadcasting, but actually consistency in our lifestyle.
Yes.
And we've just done two on our network, at the GPA network, we've just done two teaching months, January and February, on this, because Jennifer O'Brien and myself did the first one on the Word of God in our lives day by day. And then Sam Robertson did the Spirit of God in our lives day by day last week. And those two things are profound in what we're saying. You've got to be walking as a leader, well, actually as a whole Christian, but particularly as a leader, with Word and Spirit hand in hand.
Yes, and I think the lessons I have learned in that, we were talking this week with some of our leaders in the Global Prophetic Alliance. The Global Prophetic Alliance, as you know, is the organization that we are all members of, work for, at the moment, give all of our time and energy to, and you can join the Global Prophetic Alliance as a network member. The podcasts we do are on the side. But we were talking this week about, in a leadership meeting, about Dunbar's theory, Dunbar's number theory. It's a well-walked if you're in church leadership. And it's the theory about what limits human group sizes. And the numbers who can meet together comfortably, mm-hmm. and we stay sane, and what dynamic is pulled from each of those groups. And Dunbar, the number you will know is either 120 or 150. 150 is the more famous number. And that's where your social group gets maxed out. Mm-hmm. If there are more than 120 or 150 people in a room, you move from a community dynamic to a crowd dynamic. Now, the crowd dynamic has value. You need this mass agreement. Sometimes you need the sense of being pulled along in a great momentum. But most of us get maxed out in 120 to 150. There's some whose brains are wired to go to 250 and to sit there. But it's more common that we max out in community groups. Now, the point of all of that is that social media and broadcasting robs from us the true relational reward. Mm-hmm. People think they know us. They sort of do because we're very open. We don't really know them at all. There's a give and take, but it's a certain sort of give and take and nourishment of each other. Is why commenting when we broadcast matters to us, mm-hmm. because it's a give and take in the ebb and flow of relationship. But what Dunbar really hits more than those big numbers is the 1 to 5 intimates. Mm-hmm. And the fact that if you don't have 1 to 5 intimates, the people who really know you and the definition of is in a really good day, but also in a really bad day, they know you in the journey of strengths and weaknesses. He suggests, and we know this to be true, you can't really survive. And then, of course, he has the 15 or the 12 to 15 to 30 number, which is your community, your table life, those you have round for dinner. And the let's talk about this and push this. The research, this American research, so give me grace if you're not in America. The Americans now have a new phenomenon of zero intimates. They have no one who is classed in the category of knowing them in their good and their bad days. Even those who are married, that their spouse no longer counts as an intimate because of how they live, withholding intimacy and being known from one another, or really intimate life of sharing. Tragic. Now, I know I've talked for a lot about that, but here's my learn. You can get behind that platform and you can broadcast and you can have some degree of give and take. And I can travel the world and zoom around platforms, bringing the word of the Lord. And so can you guys. Or you can sit in your studio, in your bedroom at home and watch what we do. If you do not have mm-hmm. those intimates, you will not survive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You will not survive. And I know what it's like to friendships come and go. You know what it's like. I don't know how much we want to tell of our stories of days of loss mm-hmm. and days of pain and days of finding that those who we thought were going to be intimates forever are no longer our intimates. Mm-hmm. And the push and the pull of that journey to heal, to trust again, to create new intimates, and to have the strength to opt in again into that journey, knowing that you just can't get by without that 1 to 5 intimate.
Mm-hmm. I think it's particularly challenging for leaders.
Yes.
And leaders, first of all, have to resolve that in their own lives. And that's a prayer journey before the Lord.
Yes.
Heal me so that I can trust.
Yes.
Heal me so that I can find those ones that I can have mm-hmm. those relationships with. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, just on a personal level, Nigel and I have the opposite response to loss or grief in personal relationships. Mm-hmm. I tend to think I've done something wrong. So I'm doing a lot of self-searching mm-hmm. for how did I get that wrong? What did I do? How come I never came up to the mark? How could they leave me? kind of thing.
Yeah.
Whereas Nigel has the opposite.
Yeah.
He's like, well, it's their fault. They couldn't cope with how amazing I am, you know, sort of thing. So off they go.
I think, Nigel, you're in the minority. We're all with Louise. Oh, no, I'm a failure.
Well, of course, that's a that's a nice little defense mechanism for him as well. Uh-huh. But anyway, we won't go into that. But seriously, grasping hold of our, as leaders, our own journey of developing intimate relationships so that we are robust in that, so we have something to model to others going on, going forward, because this is going to be a significant need in the days to come, in days of crisis. And, you know, there's that phrase about we will be leading people who don't understand intimacy because they do not have those intimate relationships.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a whole work and journey for leaders, even at step one, to get hold of. Get your own intimate relationships, be solid in them. And this is also a word to marriages, you know, people in leadership in their marriages, making them as strong and getting the input that they need to be as strong as possible. So then you can model something to show it's possible and how you can then build intimate relationships so that the people in your congregations or whoever you minister to in whatever way, they're catching something of how important this is, because it's going to be a vital lifeline. It's because it's not even about just thriving. It's that you will not survive if you do not have this in place.
Can I come to David and to Nigel as gentlemen around the table to speak into this? And I think we're being very firm here. Look, I can prophesy till the cows come home. I don't know where that phrase comes from.
It's very Irish.
It's a very Irish phrase. I can prophesy to the cows come home about anointings. I do think there are anointings on wartime leaders. I do think there are anointings. I do think the frequency of broadcasting is really matters. But what I've learned and what we have all learned is that if we don't get this 1 to 5 intimates right, we simply will not. And this is the war ground of our hearts that will set us apart. And I don't mean pastor fraternals. No. I don't mean the, you know, I mean the 1 to 5. Do not be deluded, listeners, that it's suddenly, you know, okay if it's, well, I went to the Unity meeting and there were 40 pastors from our church, from our town here, and we all prayed together with it, and then, you know, we're in a Unity meeting, so I must have intimates. Nonsense. I turned up to church, you know, and I hugged somebody, and I would turn to my neighbor when I was told we must be intimate. Nonsense. You know, can we, I do think that the problem with the broadcasting is you can geographically hide from intimate relationships.
Oh, for sure.
So, gentlemen, hit us with it.
I find it tremendously conflicting, actually, as I wrestle with it. On the one hand, we know that Jesus managed with, he had these three close buddies.
Yeah. And then he had the 12.
And then he had the 12. Mm-hmm. And then he had the however many traveled
72.
With them. The
72.
Obviously the 72. And then there was the more in the upper room. And then there was the crowd. So Jesus managed it, and he did what was enough. He said, it's, you know, he'd done enough. It's finished. His work was finished. So clearly he thought he had seeded enough for the crisis that the new church was about to face, i.e. him going to the Father. But on the other hand, I'm kind of wired and always have been for large numbers. And my background before working in ministry was working with orchestras to fill concert halls, marketing and audiences and attracting big audiences. Mm-hmm. So I'm always wired for that. So I do find, and I love the fact that the technology allows us now to broadcast to thousands of people, and Emma, you get to prophesy the word of the Lord to platforms with many thousands.
Oh, tens of thousands in an auditorium.
Yeah. And I often wonder, where is that? I guess you're saying, like, I don't know who told us this truism when we had Jessica, our first child, that the best thing you can do as a father is to demonstrably love your wife.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do for your child is to demonstrably love your wife. And it's a true thing. And I suppose that's demonstrating to them intimacy and the need for that, and then that helps them, and they see things modeled, and we as leaders need to model that in the small places. But yeah, I wrestle with this small or large.
I think Jesus is very happy with the crowd. He's always, though, in the direction of, I prefer the 72. Oh, I'm even more delighted with the 12. And I am at my happiest with the 3 and the 1. And the sense of the direction of travel of Jesus has got to be noteworthy there. And I like you. I mean, the thrill, even to the human ego, of putting your best clothes on and your highest heels and you're sparkling in a way that Sammy Robinson says that the angels blush with your diamante jewelry, and on you go and you bring the word of the Lord, you know, and this, and then you question your own motives, you know, because you had so much fun in it. And there is absolutely a place for that. I think, did somebody once say that every church leader wants a big church and every church member wants a small church, you know, and they're always, because we're questioning our motivation the entire time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, but Jesus was fine with it. I mean, he models that exactly as you've well explained. Mm-hmm. And I think we have got to understand that there is a place for both and.
Yes.
You know, we love the intimate. We understand that that's the birthplace. That's where it really happens. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have the crowd. You can do without that, but you cannot do without the intimates. That's the point.
That's the point. And that's the missing element is really where we're going for leaders and leaders in crisis and leaders in war. So I don't think we have the same issues with the mega church and the broadcasting. We're sort of in and around and playing in the waters of that. The missing elements are for survival that then you shadow your church with, because leaders always shadow and shadow the culture, is this 1 to 5 intimates, Nigel. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's a challenge for blokes in general, this intimate. Now, I mean, you know, you can't move away from the family to start with and the strength of a marriage, really. Yeah. And I mean, we're together, what, 36 and a half years.
We're married 36 and a half, we've been together.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there is that depth of companionship in all we've done. And it's not, she's the supportive wife and I'm the whatever. It doesn't work like that at all, right? At the moment, you know, I came to Glasgow to support Louise in that sense. And so there's all of that. But I know that back in church life in Ireland, and I was traveling extensively, I had about 5 guys who were part of the church, but also were very close to me. And they had an agreement between them. And, you know, thankfully, they were reasonably well-heeled guys. And they traveled the world with me at their own expense and did not want me traveling to Hong Kong or Vancouver or any of those places without one of them, because they felt it was dangerous, you know, not in the sense of getting shot or something, but just, you know,
vulnerable.
And so I was, and sure. But I then also had a number of friends of equal stature of ministry. That's not that I was way up there, but, you know, there's no point having a friend who's so far ahead of you or whatever. But I had 4 or 5 guys around the world who were peers who I could share things with. And that kind of goes back to a previous podcast on confession. And I talked to some of those guys about different sorts of things. And it was a good place to at one level confess, because the guys who traveled with me were part of my church.
Yeah.
And so you're dealing with that dynamic, whereas these guys weren't. They were colleagues and friends in ministry. So I had those two things going on all the time. And of course, now I've come to Glasgow. It's not that they're all gone. They're not. In fact, one rang last night from Texas. But the reality is, it changes, and now you've got to rebuild again, because we're out of context now.
And it's the bravery to keep going again, isn't it? Now, you happen to move house, but we gain and we lose, and we gain and we lose in a myriad of different ways.
But we open the capacity within us for those intimate relationships. And actually, that unless we get badly hurt and don't heal, the capacity remains. And I think it's worth saying that I do think it's different for us all. And what I would consider a deep relationship and an intimate relationship is very different than how Nigel would see it. So very often he will say, oh, I know that person really well, or oh, he's a great friend. And I'm thinking, if that was the friendship I had, I would not consider that a deep friendship, because for me, I there's a lot more layers, and I take it very differently. So we do need, so when we hear the term intimates or intimate relationships. I think we need to take it into our own worlds and understand what that means for us, because it is different for everybody. And people have different levels of capacity and need within that. So our self-awareness in that is very important.
Yes. And I'm sure you've discovered, as we have, that your kids are a great balancer as well.
Oh, my
goodness. I mean, my three kids are very honest with me in very different ways.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, and it balances you.
Yes, I think, Mommy, you need to deal with that type line.
Yes, exactly. Yes, and to have that relationship with the kids is such a blessing.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yes, the normalizing of that. Yeah. And I think whenever you are going to, leaders, listen up. When you're going to take that microphone, when you're going to lead in crisis, when you know you got this war coming, when you know you got to grab a Davidic anointing, because David leads the nation in scripture in the wartime. Solomon doesn't. Saul, Lester, he gets a bit overwhelmed by it, doesn't actually really know what to do when Goliath rocks up. You know, so here you have, and I think this is the person we're going to be studying, the mindset of a David who knows what it is to fight and win, and to stand in the nation, in the midst of the nation in warfare. Not all of the Old Testament kings land that success or are asked to be that. But there's the Davidic portion of he's just anointed for it. He's just anointed. There is something that is just an anointing. And what do we find with David? Mighty men in a cave.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Doing the formation work of Benaiah and Shema and Eleazar. They're doing the work in the cave. In the back of beyond, we've been in that cave. Well, so are.
And he even had 3 and 30, didn't he?
Yeah. Like similar yeah. Kind of the three might. Yeah, similar. The similar for the model for war and Jesus modeling almost an identical set of numbers for his war and his wars against the great principalities and powers of Satan is the clash of the kingdoms. David is the clash of the nations. Jesus is the clash of the kingdoms. But this sense of the parallels there of how King David and King Jesus structure their lives to be able to be sustained in the war epoch that both of them are going through and both dealing with large crowds and the leadership of many, many people. And so I almost want to say, I'm sorry if you were looking for a magic secret, listeners, you know, for some, here's the magic, here's the golden goose again. No, it is a much more basic understanding of the navigation of your own heart, that you are secure enough in that, that then you can be creative, that then the power of God is something that you can go into together, that then, you know, you're able to host the Spirit. Because actually, can I tell you what? If I come to a platform, I don't know, it'd be interesting to hear your guys taking it. If I have somebody and I'm in the audience congregation who I know loves me and winks at me like, go for it, go for it, go for it. And it's not that I'm looking for permission.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm looking, and it's not, is it even that I'm looking for agreement? I think I'm looking for somebody who knows me to be like, this is okay. And you get more of the power of God flowing in what I do.
Without a doubt.
It's incredible to watch that dynamic, that you just need a friendly face who is not interested in, can I take the microphone from you? I mean, you'll give it in an instant because you love them, but who's not worried about my platform, my visibility, but knows that they're on your team and you're on their team.
Yeah.
And the agreement or the love or the seenness, it enables a greater outpouring of the power of God.
Yeah.
And you know you can go somewhere completely different.
Absolutely.
And I don't know about you, I'm going to ask you this question. I know we've gone over time, but I actually think this is worth sitting in because we'll not get the three of you back for a while. But I actually know that in those places, God turns up with greater weight. And if those people are not in the room, we don't get the same dynamic of the power of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because, it's because the leader, I don't feel as robust in going there without somebody in your corner.
Absolutely.
One can put 1,000 to flight 2,000.
Totally. And you can, it is a totally different feel.
Yes.
And I just know with Nigel and I working together, when he was there, it wasn't just the security that I felt that I could go somewhere, but it's the sense of oneness together.
Yes.
We're in this together. And whether I succeed or whether I fail, you're still there going, you know, good on you or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that oneness together and that affirmation and move the momentum together towards the goal, there's nothing like that. It is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And then if you get that multiplied, you get a multiplied effect.
If you can get it team who will do that. Do you want to comment on that, Nigel?
Yeah, well, it's just that sense of having somebody with you who knows you, particularly when you're visiting. I mean, it's different in your own community where your own people are around you. That's the different dynamic. But when you're traveling, you have that that partnership together, one, two, or three, or how many, to say, you know, this is what I'm thinking of going for. Are you, do you hear this? Is there anything you want to say?
Yes.
And then you come back down and go, how did that go? And so you get that whole dynamic together. And it's not just an affirmation of me or what.
It's not an ego thing. It's an agreement
in the spirit at some level.
Yes, and how vitally important it is. Yeah. And you can't get that leaders without somebody in your armpit.
Absolutely.
You just cannot go there.
Yeah.
David, do you want to comment?
I just want to bless those who are listening and our leaders to find your
intimates.
Find your intimates and your tribes and
to go again in that.
Yeah, and maybe it hasn't quite worked out thus far. Know that actually the current shaking or the shaking that we've been through as a church, God knew that. God was not shocked by the shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that if things in your life have been shaken, maybe you had to shake your tree so that actually you would find, I don't know, the other apples that were shaken at the same time so that you can get together with them.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, my loyal listeners, to What the Prophets Say, what a rich and informative and sort of helpful time together. And I'm sure you will want to hear me say a massive thank you to my husband, David Sart, to Nigel and Louise Reed for spending these three sessions with us in our journey in podcast land together, because we are richer and better because of it. And so make sure, I think we have Sam back for the next episode. Is ever my sidekick?
Kick.
Not my sidekick. That will always make me giggle, verbal faux pas. Anyway, so we bless you, loyal listeners, and thank you very much for joining us for this episode of What the Prophets Say. Thank you for listening to this episode of What the Prophets Say with me, Emma Stark. If you would like to go deeper with us, you would be very welcome to join our network, the Global Prophetic Alliance. You can find that at propheticscots.com, where we have a comprehensive training program to lead you into deeper realms of the Spirit of God and encounter. If you feel a call in the pull to deliverance ministry, you can download my latest e-course, which is a comprehensive overview of getting people free from demonic oppression. You'll find that at demonbusting.com. Join us on these different platforms for more interaction with Emma Stark, Sam Robertson, and the GPA team.